Mr. Richens, you're in three.
We found this boat, and it was full to the gunwales of food, tin food, corned beef, ratatouille, and our rations were all dry rations. So the quartermaster commandeered this, and we did eat very well a few days after that. The army ration packs we had were very good, but to get some solid food was a lot better, which was a big morale booster for the troops. But the Falkland Islanders in the settlement, again, they were so pleased of what we'd done for them. It's something that we've not experienced again, very hard to come to terms with people being so thankful towards us. They just couldn't do enough for us. We had a church parade, which, again, two-power going back to church. I think we did come quite holy on the way down and within the Falklands. We had a service for the loss of the commanding officer. We all thought that Major Keeble would automatically be appointed commanding officer. A few days after that, we heard different that a new commanding officer was going to be appointed and will join us in the Falklands, which at that time we were a bit sick, because everybody had a great respect for Chris Keeble, for what he'd done. And I think we are annoyed, the battalion's nose would put out a joint that, another CO will be coming to take over, which we all thought was wrong at the time.
Can we go on to what happened after the battle now, please, for the rest of the campaign?
We regrouped. The Gurkhas came in. We moved out. Our next objective was to get to Bluff Cove, Fitzroy. There was talk of us marshing. My company commander had this brilliant idea of, well, why don't we phone them to see if there's any troops there? He phoned the settlement manager to say, he just phoned a number, hoping that the manager would answer the phone, which he'd done. And he said to him who he was. Are there any Argentinians in your settlement? He said, no, they've left. We mounted a small operation, a heli-borne operation, of one platoon on a house near it, which there was report of enemy, but the assault was put in, but there was no enemy there. A Chinook arrived, and the advance party took off. Now, the good old REF will have a peacetime regulation that 35 packs per Chinook is the limit, but for that operational load, I think we had something like 84 persons on that Chinook, every person carrying four mortar bombs plus our personal equipment and Bergens. It took off and it landed successfully, so I think we were all pleased on that. We were dropped about 2 miles short of Fitzroy, and this is the first time that we met up with the commanding officer. In fact, I knew Colonel Chandler from our days in Berlin, and this apparition came towards me and said, hello, Sergeant Major. And through the mist, I said, well, who are you? And it was Colonel Chandler. And it was nice to hear that Colonel Chawner took over the battalion. We were a bit apprehensive who was going to take over. We knew Colonel Chawner, who was a company commander back in Berlin, and he was very well known to the battalion. We took over the settlement. The main body of the battalion came in. We, as a battalion, or as a company, were a bit concerned that the battalion was so confined within Fitzroy, Bluff Cove. B Company, we said we weren't going to be in the settlement, so we went up and made a defensive position on the high ground on the outskirts of the settlement. We were there, I can't remember how long, maybe a day or so, when we heard on the radio that air raid warning red, that was aircraft on its way from the Argentine. I think 7 aircraft took off. On the way into the Falklands, 3 tailed off, and within seconds, 3 aircraft, superb flying by the Argentinian Air Force, came round the contours, up over the top of our position, straight across the bay, and unfortunately dropped their load on the Sir Galahad. And
Sir Tristram.
That's right, yes, yeah. Some brilliant flying. A lot of panic through all stages from that. Battalion members were running towards with the weapons to the beach, trying to get the Welsh guards off. We'd done as best we could. We were bringing them off, bringing them back into the sheep shearing sheds, which was the only cover that we could have. Again, with our medical training, we helped a great deal in the minor wounds and burns, reassuring the people. But when it all calmed down, I did get rather annoyed that the Welsh Guards, and I'm not trying to down the Welsh Guards at all, that they came ashore, they had done their bit, and I was very concerned that one of my platoon sergeants came up to me and said, "Sir, are you aware that the Welsh Guards are giving their ammunition away? Because they think that's they've had their, they'll be shipped back or..." And I was very concerned that they were giving their ammunition away, which I've got hold of one of their company sergeant majors and asked him, did he know what was happening? And there was certain American control had to be tightened up on that. You stop taking. We then left 3 Commando Brigade, and we were then reattached or reassigned to 5 Brigade on the push into Port Stanley. We, as a battalion, done a battalion march across the Falklands to an area to the rear of Mount Kent and Wireless Ridge. Very hard approach march, grass tussocks, bog, no roads, which made the going very, very difficult, and also at night. We did come under a certain amount of fire artillery on that approach march, and the area that we went firm on, or let's say prior to that, we did have a helicopter lift for a short distance into the actually forming up point of our next operation. But when we went firm there, I think we were there for a day or so, we did experience a very heavy artillery fire from the Argentinians from Port Stanley area. But luckily a lot of the bombs went into the peat, into the bog, and didn't explode. which is very, very encouraging to us. We were then retasked to do a battalion assault on Wireless Ridge, and that was going to be a two-phase attack where D Company would do the initial assault, then we would then follow on from that. This, by now, we did have a bit more support. The company commanders with the commanding officer done a heli recce, a very successful helicopter recce. The planning was very good. The weather was a little bit better. And again, it was a two companies up assault to a hill. We were given the right artillery support that we should have had at Goose Green. But the weather changed. The assault went off. As I was going across the start line with my company commander, he did say to me, "Pete, I haven't told anybody, but we are going through a minefield," which I give him a very hard stare. And he said, "Well, if I told the lads that we're in a minefield, that's another problem they've got to come to terms with." But again, with the minefields out there, there was a lot of dummy minefields, and quite honestly, I think that was a dummy minefield. But we still joke about that to this day. Also, we had Scorpion support, which was a tremendous sight to see the Scorpions firing with the tracer. And I think if anybody was behind at the receiving end of those of that bombardment with those Scorpion, it's quite a morale booster for us. We done our attack semi unopposed. D Company did have a very difficult part, but I think D Company done a very good job on that side, and by the time that we got there, a lot of the enemy vacated their positions, and we took a real hammering when we actually got on Wireless Ridge by the Argentinian artillery. We went firm on the top to shelter from the elements as well as the amount of artillery which actually put down on us. But when daybreak came, we could see over the top of the ridge into the Falkland, into Port Stanley area, and then we got the message that a surrender has been given. The Argentinian have jacked, and you could see it looked like ant trails of Argentinians actually going back into Port Stanley, which again, the morale for us was very good. It looked like a trail of ants, and it was the Argentinians who had to surrender, and they were just moving back into Port Stanley, and it looked like thousands of people. Again, it was a great morale booster for us. We won. We sorted ourselves out as a battalion. The brigade commander, 3 commando brigade with our commanding officer, came up to our position. We'd done all the unloads and made safe with our weapons. Our helmets were taken off, and it was a nice, refreshing thing. We can put our red berries back on again. There was a quick briefing, and I remember the brigadier, it was Brigadier Thompson, say to our company commander, he said, "Okay, John, What I want you to do now is take your company down, head towards the golf, the race course, go from at the race course, and I'll feed 4 or 5 commando through you, which was quite annoying to us. And I looked to the company commander and I said, look, boss, we don't particularly want to go firm. He said, well, don't worry about it. I said, well, don't worry about it, you know, we've got this far, and there's no way that we want to go firm at the outskirts of the town. We want to go straight in. And we went off, A Company followed us. We got to the edge of the race course, and I looked at the company commander. He looked at me, and we said, well, we're going on. So we went through the golf course, A Company followed us, and we got into the town, and we went firm. Later on, we met up with the brigadier, and he wasn't duly annoyed, but I think his idea is that he wanted the commandos, the Royal Marines, to actually take the surrender in Port Stanley, but it was red rag to the bull. We were first ashore, we were the first to go into the first action, and we were going to be the first ones into Port Stanley, and that was the end of it.
What happened to you in Stanley itself?
Well, we had to look for some accommodation. We had to sort all these POWs out. We took over the Secretariat's house, which was a very nice house, which we shared with HQ 3 Commando Brigade. Our companies were allocated houses, because the majority of the occupants of the houses vacated their houses and moved into the centre of the town. So there was no problem of asking people to leave their houses. They were vacant houses. Again, we cleaned up. And then good old two probably went off to church again. After a good clean-up, we marched in threes by companies to the church, to the cathedral, where we had a church service, which I think was broadcast over the World Service. There was a program made on it. And again, it was a case of cleaning the place up. Because Port Stanley itself, again, was horrifically in shambles. Litter strewn over the place. The amount of equipment there, porter cabins, containers of ammunition, food. It was absolute chaos. The airfield at Port Stanley was the area that prisoners were going to be put as a holding area, for a POW camp. They had to be de-kitted with their ammunition, their weapons. It ended up in different parts of the town, just piles and piles of weapons, ammunition. I myself and a section under a sergeant was asked to search a ship, which a small ship was in a tug, which was in the Port Stanley Harbour there. The captain assured me that the ship was used for casualty evacuation, so it was a hospital ship. So we searched the ship and we found a lot of brand new 9mm pistols, and I think it was 150 brand new folding butt FM rifles, which everything was impounded, and the crew and the captain was again marched off and as prisoners of war. They protested over this because they were said they were hospital personnel and they shouldn't be treated like that, but they were handed over to the RMP at the time, and that's the last we saw of them. But Tupra of D Company didn't get a lot involved to actually guarding the prisoners on the up on the airfield. We'd done a certain amount of searches, clearing up. Then after all that, it was a bit looking things to do. And it got to the stage that some of the Falkland Islanders in Port Stanley, they're not used to a lot of people being about. They were very, very pleased at what we'd done for them, but it got to the stage that, well, we're really thankful for what you've done, but when will you be going?
Could you understand that?
I think we could, yes. Being then on an island, maybe not having a lot of people within their community, you've got this influx of a couple of thousand people, it must be quite trying for them. But I think we've done our job, and we want to clean up and clear off. And I think the Norland, the good old Norland, was used for prisoner of war evacuation back to the Argentine.
How soon was it before you were able to leave?
Well, before we left, we had a chance to make phone calls, and we went off for 2 days, not R&R, but it was on one of the support ships, to clean up, have a couple of beers, make some phone calls home. But when we actually got the word that we're going back on the Norland, we didn't know at the time that we were going to go to the Ascension, then back to Portsmouth, or we were going to go to the Ascension and fly back from the Ascension Islands. It was rumoured that 4-5 Commando was going to be on board with us to go back to the Ascension. I think that idea got scotched, and 3-Para, our sister battalion, went back to the Ascension Islands, where we got off at the Ascension Islands, got on the aircraft, and we flew back to Bryce Norton. But we did have, on the way back, which was quite an amusing day, it coincided in Airborne Forces Day. The Airborne Forces Day within the regiment is held every year. It's a form of a parade and a get together and a few drinks afterwards. And we had a kind of a sports day on the ship, which was proved very, very successful. It was a very good wine day, a few good drinks, different battalion members swapping stories and experiences. So for that day, it was a really good shot in the arm for us that we could relax and think over what happened on the previous weeks.